I'm Holly Wilson, and I'm the author of Kitten Tits.
Our book reviewer is Suzanne Perez, and all week she just has been saying, "I can't wait to hear you say kitten tits on air all the
I know. It's been like a year of that for me. Like, I had to call my mom and tell her the name. She had to go to a bookstore and order that.
Holly Wilson's novel, Kitten Tits, isn't easy to describe. It follows 10-year-old Molly, a girl living at a now-closed Quaker group home. When she tries to befriend Jeannie, a 20-something recently released from jail, she embarks on a quest to find some of the most meaningful people that have been missing from her life. That description really doesn't do the novel justice, and what follows is a complicated and unpredictable adventure with recently separated conjoined twins, ghosts, and much more. I recently spoke with Holly Wilson about her Kansas connections and the craft that went into bringing Kitten Tits to life. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Holly Wilson. Typically, I ask authors to describe their books, but I'm not sure if it's fair to ask you to do that. Do you have like an elevator description of Kitten Tits?
Oh, it's so hard. Let's see. I would say it's about a 10-year-old girl in 1992 who attempts to befriend this young woman in her 20s who's an ex-con, not very good, and she ends up running away to a fictional World's Fair in Chicago, and then all kinds of things ensue. There are a couple of former conjoined twins who are trying to kill each other, sort of. There are ghosts, there's spiritualism, there's a psychic medium and an iron lung, there's fires, there's all kinds of stuff. But yes, it's very hard to describe.
Before I get into asking about the book, our listeners will be interested to know that you have a Kansas connection. What is that?
I do. I grew up in Kansas. I grew up in Nickerson, Kansas, and I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Kansas in Lawrence, and then of course I did my MFA in fiction writing at Wichita State.
I want to start by talking about our protagonist and narrator, Molly. She's 10 years old, as you mentioned, and she's living in a Quaker group home. What else should we know about Molly?
Oh gosh. So yeah, Molly lives in it's hard to describe. It's sort of like a Quaker. It used to be a Quaker group home. In the backstory, there was a fire and the place burned down. And at this point, when the novel begins, Molly lives there with her father, who was blind, but now he can see. And the woman who runs the Quaker commune or group home or however you want to term it. And that's it. So it's a group home, but it's also very, very lonely. It's just her dad, who's, a blind or a formerly blind puppeteer who doesn't really pay much attention to her. And then this woman, Evelyn, who runs the group home, who is sort of she's the closest thing she has to a maternal figure. Her mother's dead. She died when she was a baby, so she really doesn't have a much of a mother figure. She's sort of homeschooled by Evelyn, but mostly she's just sort of left to, wander around and do what she wants to do and watch TV. So yeah, that's before Jeannie, the ex-con, shows up. That's her life. She has one friend named Sweetie that she doesn't really like very much. And then her only other friend, I would say, well, not really, but she has a pen, or she thinks she has a pen pal she writes to, but he never writes her back. So she writes to this sort of imaginary boy who lives in the city, and he never returns. But he eventually, I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, she eventually finds him, and that plays out more in the second half of the book.
So where does Molly's voice come from? I mean, do you
Oh
recall being a
gosh.
10-year-old girl, or is she influenced by a different source?
Yeah, she's well, I don't know. I think when I started the book, I had just read a lot of Mark Richard, his short stories. He has this amazing one called This Is Us, excellent. And it's told in this very, very close first person child point of view. And Mark Richard is he's amazing at child narrators. And I'd never written a child narrator before. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll do a child. Ever since I was at Wichita State, I started writing in first person then. And I always really liked first person. It always sort of it came naturally to me, but I'd never done it, a child. And so I started and I found like, I don't know, there's something about for me when I write in a child voice, it has energy. And the energy like pulls you through. Like it can even generate plot. And I struggle with plot, but I don't struggle usually with voice or with character. Like I hear it. And so Molly, I started doing her voice, and then something that people talk a lot about with the book is her. She has quite the potty mouth. She curses quite a bit. She uses slurs. She's not. You can't take her most places, right? So I played around with it. And initially, I had her saying, like, instead of actually saying the F word, she would say F, like effing, like EFFING. And then I remember one day I was working and I was like, nah, I just feel like let's let her say it. Let's just let her drop it. And I did. And it was weird because I'm like, oh, I like this. This has energy, right? And I feel like it makes sense for her character because she's so lonely and she so wants to be seen by the people in her life, the adults, anyone really, basically. And so she's doing whatever she can, right? She's jumping up and down. She's tap dancing. And this all comes out in her language, right? So this language is going to get your attention. And so I found it as soon as I started really writing her like that, it clicked. And I'm like, well, a lot of people won't like it, but it felt right. And so I had to do it.
So you just mentioned, being influenced with child voice by Mark Richard. But as I read this, I experienced notes of, Catherine Den's Geek Love and, several of Salman Rushdie's work. Are there any authors, living or dead, who you turn to for inspiration with, not the child voice, but
I don't know. Like, I think by the time I was into it, I wasn't consciously thinking of anyone specifically, but then, you're influenced by everything you read, right? So in another interview, someone brought up J.D. Salinger and Catcher in the Rye. And of course, I've read Catcher in the Rye. I love Catcher in the Rye. And as soon as that came up, I was like, oh, wow, I was influenced by that. But it never consciously occurred to me. I was like, yeah, it's definitely related to Catcher in the Rye for sure. I think Joy Williams is amazing. I love her work so much. I'm trying to think who else. Oh, I don't know that it shows up so much, but George Saunders was really, really pivotal for me as a writer. I think certain writers, they give you permission to not do what you think you're supposed to be doing and just to, oh, I don't have to do that, I guess, right? And so George Saunders was a writer who gave me permission to let go of any kind of like more formal qualities. I love writers like and I don't know that this doesn't you won't necessarily see this in my book, but like Gary Lutz, her sentences are just I mean they're so beautiful and musical. I'm really into sentences, and there are certain like Christine Schutz, she writes great sentences. And of course, Catherine Dunn. I love that when anytime anyone mentions Catherine Dunn, I want to blush and I'm so incredibly flattered. But I wasn't actually thinking of her, though I do love her. But like I said, it's you're influenced by everything, whether you realize it or not.
I want to talk a bit about setting, primarily the timeline. This book was set in 1992. What are the advantages or disadvantages of setting a book 30 years ago?
Oh, well, the number one advantage is no smartphones. That's such a trick, right? Where you have to like now you have to accommodate for access to the internet at every waking moment. So, and also, I mean, a really important thing about Molly is her loneliness. And if it were set today, I don't know what she w would she be on social media? Would she be on the internet? Like, what, would she have some friends all over the world she'd be able to communicate with? I don't know. So that's the big one. And I'm starting a new book right now, and that's I'm kind of running into that. I'm like, well, I kind of want to set it now, but then I keep running into that, like, well, I don't want to have to deal with internet access. So I don't know, it might also be set before. But yeah, the internet for sure. Also, I don't know, like, with her language and her use of certain slurs, people will say, oh, well, that's how people talked then, so it's okay that she talks that way. And I have mixed feelings about that because I get that's true, but also people still use that language. I hear kids, and they still very much use language like that today. And I think also people, when they say that, people didn't know better in the 90s, and they would use those terms. I was there, and people knew better, right? Some people knew better. I don't. It's horrific, awful language. And so I don't want Molly to get a pass because of the set. That's certainly not why I said it then. I think also with the setting too. I was just I would have been 12 in 1992, so just a few years older than Molly. And so I know what it's like to be a kid. In the 80s, the early 90s. I don't know what it's like to be a kid now. It's very different. So that was a big reason for setting it then, too.
I was struck by Molly's description of her mother's death in her letter to her pen pal and how she acts out her mother's films at the library and, even her body movements. And Molly and her ghost friend or thought form, they're searching for their dead mothers through necromancy. Jeannie and Mombi are disjointed Siamese twins who feud about their dead mother. Sweetie lost one of her mothers. Can you talk to me about the role of mothers living or dead throughout this book?
Yeah, so I started with Molly, the character. I'm like, okay, she doesn't have a mother. So the thing that she wants, that she yearns for, is a mother. She wants someone to see her, to take care of her, to be looking out for her. She doesn't have that at all. Maybe this is just how my brain works. So I started with that idea. And then sometimes I don't even notice that I do it, but I start to pattern. And then I'll be thinking, like, oh, wow. Let's just give this person a dead mother too. And then I become conscious of it. I'm like, oh wow, everyone has a dead mother. And then I lean into it and I'm like, okay, that's what we're doing. So the idea of the mother is repeated. I think what I'm guessing probably what I was going for is, like, there's a line in the book where Jeannie tells her, the only one who will ever really love you is your mom. And I don't really believe that. Of course. However, there's something to it, this idea that there's this person that you came from, and your mother's essentially, or hopefully, it doesn't always work out that way for everyone, but ideally your mother is your home. It's where you came from. And without that kind of foundational, like, love, support, connection, you could be in for trouble in your life. And then that in Molly is for sure. And again, I think in our culture we see that in the figure of the mother. I mean, in real life you could certainly get that from other people. You could get that from a father. You could, someone. You need it from somebody. And Molly never gets it. She tries.
I want to talk about structure because this book is broken into sections and chapters. And in the physical book, there are no quotation marks. I also listened to the audiobook, so the narrator kind of, put them in, if you will. But this happens frequently in literature. I'm curious about this decision not to use quotation marks.
Yeah, so for this book, I can't speak for other books that do it, but so something about Molly is she wants attention so badly. She's such an unreliable narrator. You really don't know if what she's saying is true. I don't even like when I'm writing her, I'm like, I wonder if that really happened. I don't even always know. So when she's reporting dialogue, for example, if I were to use quotation marks, then that gives her like a layer of reliability I don't want to give her, right? So if you put something in quotation marks, it has this effect. Well, oh, they really said that because I'm watching them say it right now. Because look, it's in quotation marks. If you take out the quotation marks, it's all reported, sort of. And it puts you in this state where you're like, what's real? What's not? There are some things I think that, yeah, like, okay, I think this really happened. But other things where I don't know.
Okay, so you mentioned there was a fictional World's Fair in Chicago, because I actually looked up Chicago World's Fair 92 and things were popping up, but I was looking for Cosmosphere. I didn't know if that was a Kansas
Oh,
connection or
I
not.
stole that. No, I stole that from because I so I in high school I worked for a while part I had a part-time job at the Cosmosphere in Hutchinson and in Kansas. And I was trying to think of a name for that place. And I was like, well, I want something like the Cosmosphere, like some because that has a very World's Fair, attraction sound to it. And I kept trying to come up with stuff and I was like, I'll just use the Cosmosphere, I guess. So it's not, that's the only connection. It has nothing else to do with the actual Cosmosphere in Kansas.
So Jeannie and Mombi's mother created wax figures for a museum in Dodge City, and DeMarcus's mother made glass eyes. Is there a connection there with making
Well,
these
yeah.
bodily figures?
Yeah, well, no, sort of. So there's I hadn't actually thought of that, but so just like with the mothers, like everyone has a dead mother in the story. Everyone has, except for Molly, everyone is an artist, right? A different kind of artist. So DeMarcus, her ghost friend, is a painter. His mother painted ocular prosthetics, so glass eyes. His father was an illustrator, a scientific illustrator. And then Mombi is a actress. And Molly's mother was also an actress. And so I'm just sort of like circling the world of like art, different kinds of art. And so and each one of them has a different relationship with art, I think. It means something different to each one of them. And I don't even know, I just what I'm saying even about art, but it's something I think about a lot. And Molly isn't, she's not an artist, but she wonders about herself, like, could I be talented? Do I have any talent at all? Would my mother be proud of me? But all these people around her, her father's, he makes puppets and does puppet shows. And so I think I hadn't really connected the glass eyes to the wax figures, the sculpt, she's a wax sculptor, their mother. But yeah, now that you say it, I guess there is a connection. I was just thinking more broadly, like, let's make them all artists.
I attended a wedding in Chicago last week, and the officiant was Gillian Flynn. And I
No
spoke with her
way.
about you and your book, and our listeners will recognize the name as the author of Gone Girl, but talk to me about working with her as your publisher. Yours was one of the first books published by her imprint.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's really amazing. So yeah, it was very surprising to me because the book had been on submission for a while and I had kind of given up. When I heard from Zando, I had already assumed it wasn't going to sell and be published. And so then I got a call from my agent and he says, well, they want the book for Gillian Flynn's imprint. And I'm like, what? Gone Girl? What? It's not a thriller, it's not like that. But apparently, yeah, so Gillian has really awesome, I say that because she picked my book. She has really eclectic tastes, right? And so under her imprint, she publishes various things. Like she has some mystery detective stuff. I think there's a YA title now, my book. And so I was sort of stunned by it at first. I was like, really? Gillian Flynn likes my book? Then I kept thinking about it and I was like, well, no, because, it's first person, it's Boise. Gone Girl's that, right? Gone Girl does that. Her fiction does that. And also, I think Gillian, as you can see in her writing, she really likes complicated female characters. She allows her female characters, protagonists, to be strong and flawed and everything, right? And readers react to that in various ways. So the more I thought about it, I was like, well, I can see that because Molly's a very flawed character for sure. She's a really strong character too. So the more I thought, I was like, okay, I get it now. So Gillian's been wonderful. She's really generous with her time, and yeah, I'm a big fan.
So as we discussed, you grew up in Kansas and you received your MFA from Wichita State. You have a reading and signing at Wichita State tomorrow. How does it feel to return home?
Oh, it feels great. I do come back to Kansas usually about twice a year. Usually I'm back in the summer and then over the holidays. So I'm excited to be back in October. I haven't been in Kansas in October in years. And I'm really excited to go back to Wichita State, where I did my MFA and hopefully see some faces I know. So it'll be wonderful. I'm gonna bring my son with me and he's excited because he's gonna get to see his grandparents and on Halloween. He's gonna go trick-or-treating in Wichita. So it feels really good. It's sort of like coming full circle because when I started at Wichita, I was at the very I was gosh, I was just 23 when I started at WSU and wanting to be a writer and I'd never published anything. And I'll be frank, I wasn't that good. Like I say in the acknowledgments, the professors there really, they tried to whip me into shape. It was sort of like a boot camp for me, but they were great. And I learned so much, and so it's neat to come back and like, look, I wrote a book and I published it.
Well, that book is Kitten Tits. Holly Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Holly Wilson, author of the book Kitten Tits, which was published by Zando Gillian Flynn Books. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Books and Whatnot is a podcast for readers, where we talk about the titles we've read lately and those bookish little discoveries along the way.
You know what, Beth? I have just realized what my favorite new genre is. And my favorite new genre is WTF.
It is.
Listen to Books and Whatnot every month from KMUW, part of the NPR Podcast Network.